A couple of national stories I want to keep up on here. This is interesting. The Federal Trade Commission narrowly voted on Tuesday to ban nearly all non-competes, employment agreements that typically prevent workers from joining competing businesses or launching ones of their own. The FTC received more than 26,000 public comments in the months leading up to the vote. Chair Lena Khan referenced on Tuesday some of the stories that she had heard from workers. Quote, "We heard from workers who, because of non-competes, were stuck in abusive workplaces," she said. One person noted, "When an employer merged with an organization whose religious principles conflicted with their own, a non-compete kept the worker locked in place and unable to freely switch to a job that did not conflict with their religious practices." These accounts, she said, pointed to the basic reality of how robbing people of their economic liberty also robs them of all sorts of other freedoms. I want to stop there for a minute, because that was the basis of the arguments of the majority here in the FTC, which is a horrible place that steals all of your freedoms, by the way, in general, not just about this story, just in general. The FTC is something else, to say the least. But I want to deal with that logic for a moment. It's particularly the argument that it is stealing your economic liberty. I fully admit that non-competes are a bit controversial, and that defending them is not exactly the most popular thing in the world, because a worker would love to have the freedom to go wherever the hell they want, anytime they want. I certainly get that. But at what point have we lost control of the concept of the two-way street that is these agreements and economic decision-making in general? A bit of a pet peeve of mine, but when a contract is signed, a marriage contract, a business contract, a contract of any kind. If Danny Martinetti and I signed a contract for some reason, right? Who signs the contract? And how can you stop that contractual relationship from beginning? The answer is both, and either one of them not wanting to participate, right? If you don't want to sign it, don't sign it. If they don't want to offer it, don't offer it. When you both decide something, and you say yes and put your name down on the dotted line that says, "I hereby agree to these terms that were offered and I accept," that's a contract to me. And you feel free to talk me out of it. I understand. I'm very sorry about the people that have found themselves in weird and difficult circumstances. But if you are presented an option from somebody that says, "Look, you can take this job. It's probably going to include more money, but one of the things for us is we don't want you to go to our competitors and then screw us, right? So please sign this document saying you won't do that. It is a prerequisite for you working here. If you sign that, I don't want to hear it. I don't want to hear the whining. I don't want to hear the grumbling, because no one made you do it. You did it because you chose to do it. You said to yourself, self, this is a risk that's worth taking." I mean, let's go down the risks really quickly. It limits your economic options, right? You have fewer places you can go work. It means you may be caught up in some sort of a weird situation like that, where there's a corporate merger, and now I don't like the new company I'm at, and I have nowhere to go, and whatever, right? It might force you at some point to do a career change because your options are low. It's like, I got to get out of this place. This place is terrible, and I need a new job, and I can't, really, because of my non-compete. So I can't really be in this industry anymore, and I've got to go to something else. It's a risk, guys. It is a risk. And I know it's an unpopular risk, and nobody wants to take it, but nobody has a gun to your head and is making you do it. It is a contract, freely offered, freely accepted. The FTC estimates that about 30 million people, or one in five American workers, from minimum wage earners to CEOs, are bound by non-competes. It says that the policy change could lead to an increased wages totaling nearly $300 billion per year by encouraging people to swap jobs freely. Yeah, that's, again, the kind of dime store economic analysis that the idiots at the FTC are known wide for. That does not account at all for the additional salary that comes from non-competes. You are trying to entice somebody to do something they don't want to do, right? As an employer, I'm offering Danny a job. He does not want to give up his future economic freedom of being able to freely associate with who he wants to go to and, you know, leave me and go to some other company. So in order to entice him to do so, I up the ante of his salary. I'm like, look, I realize it's a bit of a risk. We're going to give you a 10% higher salary than you otherwise would have earned if this was just a regular job. The loss of that, what does that do to salaries? I mean, shut up, FTC. Like, don't tell me that you have any idea what this is going to add to the economy. And in fact, increased fluidity of jobs, you know, is actually not necessarily something that's going to lead to higher rates of pay. I would actually be surprised if it did. The ban is going to be taking effect later this year. It carves out an exemption for existing non-competes. So basically, you're trapped in slavery if you have an existing non-compete that companies have given to senior executives. So you're a senior executive at a company and you have a non-compete now. Tough luck, buddy. Everybody else gets to be free, but not you. You are locked in because you're one of the evil senior executives. They justified this on the grounds that these agreements are more likely to have been negotiated. The FTC says employers should not enforce other existing non-compete agreements. The vote was 3-2 along party lines. The dissenting commissioners, Melissa Holyoke and Andrew Ferguson, argued that the FTC was massively overstepping its boundaries of the power that it possesses. Holyoke predicted that the ban would be challenged in court. And by the way, Holyoke is correct. It will be. And it will eventually be struck down, which I believe it will be. By the way, courts, it's interesting. Non-competes have a tough time in court, as it is. You know, several of them, and depending on the kind and, you know, lots of aspects of it, several of them are almost non-enforceable anyway. So this is doubly stupid in a lot of ways. But it is almost 100% guaranteed to be struck down by a court at some level, if not the Supreme Court. In the future, you know, next 5 years or so, I would bet. Here's the thing, though. The other reason I brought this up, besides just the sheer stupidity, in my opinion, of this move to ban a freely associated contractual agreement between two human beings, or one corporate entity and a human being, is because of what I just read to you. The vote was 3-2 along party lines at the FTC. So you have five people that just decided the fates of 30 million people who are currently bound by non-competes and all millions more in the future who will be. Five people in the country are making the decision for the rest of everyone. Is anyone at the FTC elected? No. Are they bureaucrats? Yes. Are they political appointees? Yes. Are they partisan political appointees? Yes, they are. Five of them make a decision that has enormous consequences for the country's economy and fundamentally re-alters the alignment of contract law in this country. Five people. Five people get to do that. This is a version of what we just talked about a moment ago when I was previewing Sobolewski and that I talked about for months prior. The EV rule in Maine was to be decided by six people who were political appointees who were, in fact, partisan. In fact, multiple members of that committee were themselves self-described environmentalists that want to save the earth. They are all bureaucrats. They were not elected to anything. They are appointed by other politicians, and they were in a position to completely and totally reshape fundamentally the entire economy of the state of Maine. Utterly destroy an entire industry in car sales. Demand that production by national companies who are building cars for consumer demand reshape what they do, how they do it, and why. What kind of cars are sent to Maine, and why. What you have to buy as a consumer, and why. What options you'll have. How much money you'll have to pay. All of that was in the purview of six people who weren't elected to anything. There has been a long-standing criticism of the modern government of the United States of America and its constituent states, which is that there is now a fourth branch of government, which also exerts incredible power over your life and our economy, and yet has nothing in common at all with Republican or Democratic government. And I mean that in the political science terms, not the political parties. I mean Democratic governance and Republican forms of government. It has nothing in common with any of them. They are bureaucratic in nature. Essentially, what I'm talking about here is the rise of departments and commissions and non-governmental entities and quasi-governmental entities and boards and commissions and everything that is in that space. If you are if you've worked for the state of Maine for like 30 years in a department, you're who I'm talking about. You're who I'm talking about. The Department of Inland Fisheries and Wildlife, the Department of Education, the Department of Health and Human Services, the Department of, right? Go on down the list of all the departments. That doesn't even touch things like the FTC, right, which are commissions and have some sort of a special purpose. Hey, let's talk about the Federal Reserve for a moment. Right? I mean, you know, I can list things endlessly. None of these people are subjected to votes by you and me as to their possession of political power. It is ceded to them by our elected representatives, and they are asked and tasked with exerting that power over us and making gigantic decisions which affect our lives with no recourse by you and me to be able to do anything about it by recalling them, by voting them out the next time they're up. I mean, say what you want to about how ridiculous this legislative session is, and believe me, I've criticized it loudly, repeatedly, but we have a chance coming up here. So April. Okay, so we are looking at 7 months. 7 months from now, well, actually, it's more like six because we're late in this month. So like 6 months from now, we are going to go to the polls and we will be electing every single one of the people that just made those decisions in Augusta. So if you don't like what you just saw, you don't like Janet Mills signing that bill, LD 227, or any other bill she signs, you'd want to change who's in charge and who's making those decisions. Guess what? You get to. You can make a statement. You could say enough of these people, they're gone, they're wrong, they're bad. New people. We're electing someone else. It doesn't always happen in practice, but you're given the chance. And it routinely does happen where some sort of irate majority is out there saying, all right, enough is enough. We're throwing the bums out, new bums in. You don't get to do that to a bureaucrat. You don't get to do that to a commission. And 3-2, by a single vote, five people just decided the fates of 30 million and a massive amount of our economy.